Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. It is Rally Week at KFUO. Day sponsors are partners with KFUO in telling the good news of Jesus worldwide. You can learn more about becoming a day sponsor by contacting Mary at 314-996-1518 or Joni at 314-996-1512. Or you can send an email to gifts@kfuo.org. Thanks to Concordia University for underwriting Faith and Family. You can learn more about CUW at kfuo.org. Joining me in studio today, some friends from the Office of National Mission here at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, particularly in youth ministry, the Reverend Mark Kiesling. He's the interim director of LCMS Youth Ministry and the program director for the LCMS National Youth Gathering. Mark, welcome back to Faith and Family.
Thanks, Andy. Great to be here.
Good to have you in studio. And you brought along someone new with you today.
Absolutely.
I'm so glad that we were able to bring Juliana into the studios today. Juliana Schultz, project manager in LCMS Youth Ministry here in the International Center. Juliana, welcome to Faith and Family.
All right. It's great to be here.
Good to have you in studio and sharing with our listeners about some of the work that you're doing this year and new to the staff here at the International Center. Mm-hmm. You joined the Office of National Mission, LCMS Youth Ministry, a few months ago. How long has it been now?
I started in mid-August.
So this summer, you came to St. Louis in a beautiful St. Louis summer and moved to St. Louis. Where did you come to us from?
I was serving a congregation in the northwest side of Chicago.
Very good. And what, you're a DCE?
I am a DCE.
Like myself. We like DCEs.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And Mark likes DCEs too. And it's fun to have a few more DCEs in the building. What was your work primarily before you came to the International Center here? We'll talk about what you're working on here in just a little bit.
I served two different congregations, one in just outside of Tampa, Florida, and then one in Chicago. And in both congregations, I did kind of a variety of family ministry. So I worked with children, with youth, with their parents. I did a little bit of everything. They were both smaller congregations. So that was a great fun. I loved my time in the congregation.
Well, we are glad to have you here. And you did some studying too, if I remember correctly, in a conversation beyond your DCE education. Mm-hmm. What did you study?
Yeah. So while I was serving in Chicago, I also went back to school at Loyola University in their Institute of Pastoral Studies and studied social justice and community development there.
Very interesting. Someday we're going to have to talk about what you learned in those classes. But that's another whole program.
It was a whole other thing. But yeah, it was wonderful. I really enjoyed studying there.
What was it that drew you to that topic of study?
Yeah, I had gone on many, many mission trips, had taken students on servant events, and really loved the idea that church needed to be not just for itself, but for its community as well, and to share the gospel through their work in the community. And so I felt like I didn't have the skills to be able to do that. I didn't know how to even begin. And so I came across this program and went, oh, this is the one that will give me those skills and abilities. And so went back to school to study that, and I'm glad to be able to share it with not just my congregation, but now lots of other congregations as well.
So now here at the International Center, a project manager here in LCMS Youth Ministry, focusing specifically on some very, very specific things, particularly something with young adults. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we're starting a new program called Lutheran Young Adult Corps, and that's going to be an opportunity for young adults 18 to 26 to serve full-time, long-term in cities all across the United States.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Now, serving. What does serving look like when you're 18 to 26?
Right. We've identified lots of congregations, of campus ministries, RSOs, and other community organizations in specific cities. And what we're going to do is we're going to place young adults in those organizations and churches for 40 hours a week worth of work. They might serve 40 hours in one place or 30 in one and 10 in another. We'll split that up a little bit. But they'll all have full-time work, and they'll be able to then serve and create additional capacity and resources for those organizations that are kind of in desperate need of that. They'll live together as a community, and so they'll have an opportunity to not just serve in their places of work, but they'll also be able to kind of live together and be good neighbors and also embrace a new neighborhood somewhere in urban United States.
Very good. Well, Mark, I know there was some groundwork laid for this over the last couple of years, and then Pastor Cholak, who was serving in a similar capacity and doing some of the groundwork, the Lord called him to serve in a congregation, and so that left this opening, and so Juliana came in and took the opportunity to use what the gifts and talents and the education, the great education, mm-hmm. To serve in this way. Why is it important for us to have to develop these opportunities for young, to connect young people to ways to serve?
Sure. I think really kind of the conversation came kind of from two different angles. One of those was we already had LCMS CERT events that were taking place across the Synod, and of course congregations just on their own that serve in their capacity. And from our standpoint, the LCMS CERT event side on a program has kind of a twofold emphasis. One are the young people, generally high school age, with their adult leaders who are going to a location, whether it's a camp or a congregation or maybe another Lutheran organization, and serving for short term, usually 5 to 7 days, mm-hmm. With a specific community or within the context of the church. And it's a great opportunity, again, for young people to learn about vocation, maybe vocations never thought of, thinking about careers and things mm-hmm. in the future, as well as just to kind of, if you will, get outside of their comfort zone and be able to serve others in the name of Christ. And so definitely a short-term piece for them is hopefully something they'll take back home with them in the congregation. Usually they're traveling a little bit of a distance to do that, just to kind of have that interaction. As well, certainly the hosts of these servant events are very blessed too with young people who are coming in and serving in a variety of ways, as well as they impact their communities that are around them. So we had kind of that program already going, but really, again, primarily focused on the high school age. At the same time, we had some great ministries happening in the LCMS, especially internationally, with maybe some young adults thinking of geo-missionaries mm-hmm. And others that do some short-term mission and work. Teaching in the name of Jesus and really sharing the good news of Christ in a variety of ways. And certainly along the way, doing mercy work, but nothing that was like maybe specifically to the mercy arm of the church. And so President Harrison really had a vision for how do we take and really equip young adults and connect them to opportunities to serve long-term, really kind of in a way that reflects mercy, as well as a great opportunity for the host to also be impacted by these young people who serve as they reach their communities. And so really in that discussion, that was one thing that came about was, you know, went through a lot of different discussions, a lot of different things, whether this was just domestic or international, and how exactly did it look, and really for Juliana to come in and really refine a lot of the work that had been done to say, let's focus domestically on a specific age group, and then again, to come up with a plan to help aid those who are hosting these servants as well in a way that can impact their ministries that they will be continuing to do and how they're able to work together in the name of Christ.
Juliana, as you learned more about this position and what it would entail and the challenge that was ahead of, you know, helping develop a program for young adults, did it seem like a very daunting task?
I think that you could say that. It continues to be a bit of a daunting task. But in the same breath, the people here, everyone that I've worked with here at the International Center and Office of National Missions and Youth Ministry have all been incredibly supportive, and people have been very willing to sit down and walk me through how we can partner between departments and areas of work so that we can produce a really strong program that's going to work far into the future.
So what are you hoping, what in terms of timeline, how are you hoping to see things roll out with this?
Yeah, our hope is that we're going to be able to launch our first set of 10-month students serving. Ooh, that came out weird. we're going to be able to launch for 10 months starting in August of 2016. So they'll serve from August to May. And then our first set of 3-month opportunities then happening June through August of 2017. And from then, that will be kind of our consistent rotation.
So 3 months or 10 months.
Mm-hmm. So applications should be coming out sometime in the spring, and then we'll be able to get ready and have two houses of about 6 to 8 young adults in each one of those houses, hopefully in August of 2016.
What cities are we aiming for first time around?
Well, we're aiming for St. Louis and Philadelphia. Those are our goals at this point, though nothing is quite set in stone yet. So we're still working a lot of that out.
What are the ways that young adults might serve in Philadelphia? We'll get to St. Louis here in just a little bit.
we just had a wonderful opportunity to work with Philadelphia Lutheran Ministries mm-hmm. up there, and they have a variety of different opportunities. working at, with Shepherd in the, of the City, mm-hmm. which is a congregation that they have there. And we also have a new church plant that they're starting in Center City that's close to some of the universities there in Philadelphia. So that will probably be a place where they might serve. There's a Christ Assembly Lutheran Church, which is primarily an immigrant population from Liberia, has asked for someone to come and help them to work with their young people, but also with their adult education programs. Mm-hmm. So we have a variety of things, lots of before and after school programs or other ways that we're connecting to campus ministries and all of that. So wow. Those are some of the ways that we're talking about maybe using them.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly with Philadelphia Lutheran Ministries, they had facilities there to mm-hmm. accommodate, to provide housing for the students already.
Yeah.
Which is great. Mm-hmm. So you had a chance to go out and visit then.
I did,
Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And Mark, have you had a chance to go out there and see?
I was a part of a pilot project that we did last summer. Yeah, last August, which was with both college age and high school students, where we mm-hmm. did a week kind of short-term ministry, very much in that context, and got a connect with some of those organizations as well. Certainly Shepherd of the City right there. Mm-hmm. And like you said, right on their location, stayed there, served there, able to worship there and had a great experience.
What, as you visited that site, what was probably the most exciting or intriguing thing for you about that city or about that location? What was most promising about opportunities there?
There were just a lot of connections that we made with the churches and congregations that are serving those areas. And they are going to be, they're willing to try just about anything to get out into the community mm-hmm. to try. They had a really clear vision of what they wanted to see in the city of Philadelphia, and just an incredible passion that is a huge population of people, and they're being serviced by only three or four congregations, and yet they are really seeking in every way possible to go out there and share the gospel in whatever ways that they can. So it's exciting to have great partners, and you know that young adults are going to have a great experience when they're working with mm-hmm. such passionate, engaged people.
Moving a little bit further west, St. Louis. It only makes sense that we'd have a St. Louis Lutheran Young Adult Corps. What are you thinking about here in St. Louis? What are some of the opportunities to serve here?
Yeah, we've made a couple of connections with churches that are engaging in after-school programs that are looking to expand those mm-hmm. and to offer those to a greater number of students. We've talked with Bethesda Lutheran Ministries as an opportunity for them to serve with people who have developmental disabilities. And then also some immigrant populations using Christian Friends of New Americans and what that might look like for them as well. So all of these placements are going to be a huge variety mm-hmm. of different ways of service. And we'll be able to utilize whatever skill sets we get in front of us from the young adults who are applying in really some new and unique mm-hmm. ways. It's not just one size fits all, for sure.
Cool. I have some ideas too, but they're top secret. I can't share them with everybody on the air just yet. Wow. Well, that's exciting to hear about these opportunities that will hopefully be rolling out in 2016, and both in Philly and here in St. Louis. Yep. And I know that the organizations you'll be partnering with, the congregations you'll be partnering with are excited about this opportunity as well.
Yeah.
So the Lutheran Young Adult Corps is the name of the program. Is there a way to find out more yet? Or do we have things ready to share, or a little more time before that's ready to go out?
There is. You can for sure follow us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook at Lutheran YA Corps, CORPS.
Aha, uh-huh. Lutheran YA CORPS. Okay, very good. So on all the social media outlets.
The social media outlets.
We have preliminary information as well mm-hmm. At www.lcms.org/young-adult-corps, C-O-R-P-S. Yes. That it will be, we should probably mention that if some had heard of it before, one time when we were doing the pilot, we were going under the name Lutheran Youth Corps.
Right.
And so now we're going to take in the time about what age group we are going to be looking at for this extended service opportunity, kind of rebranding it, if you will, as Lutheran Young Adult Corps. So some of the things on the Synod website will look very similar to what was there for the Lutheran Youth Corps.
Mm-hmm. So Lutheran Young Adult Corps. And if you're looking for it, you could probably go to the LCMS website and search in the
Correct.
Search engine up at the top. And
certainly connected to the youth page if they're on that page.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, very cool. Now, are you working on other things in addition to this?
We're working a little bit here and there, but this has been my primary task. Certainly, there are other things happening in our department that that I'm playing a role in, but this has been my primary work for the moment, at least.
Well, it's exciting to have this roll out. Mark, what else do you have her working on these days?
Well, certainly one of the things that she's been doing a great job too is to kind of help us rethink. We've been doing some stuff with what we've been calling LCMS Young Adult Ministry. Mm-hmm. And that's been a lot of connections with our campus ministry, trying to connect with congregations who are effectively connecting with like those, you know, roughly mm-hmm. post-high school for maybe if they're not going on a campus through roughly age 30, connecting them to the church as they start their professional careers and things. And so Julianne has done a great job with kind of our partners there and just really thinking about how does youth core fit in or young adult core fit into that and other things as well. And really to come up with really networking those who are doing young adult ministry in different contexts. And so starting to develop that a little bit more and how young adult core plays into that. And also then those who have served in young adult core continue to be leaders in that area as well. So that's one strong thing. And certainly a lot of the ways in which we're getting the word out about young adult core. So the youth gathering is an important one of those that Julianne will be doing some work with that in our youth booth that we call it, really connecting them to future service opportunities mm-hmm. and things. So that's one core thing. And certainly continue to the plan for the young adult gatherings. We'll have 500 roughly probably young adult volunteers serving there, which will be another great opportunity for us to connect with about the service core.
Mm-hmm. A question for you, Mark. Mm-hmm. How does you mentioned the service as the mercy arm of the church, mm-hmm. The servant events and things like that. How does someone like Julianne with the experience and the education that she brings to the team, how does that help us provide, connect people to opportunities to serve, but also to do them better? It's, to prepare those opportunities to serve better.
Absolutely. I think I'm just always amazed at the networks and connections that Julianne mm-hmm. brought to the table that even in our preliminary work, considering the service core opportunity, and just that one, there are a lot of organizations who do similar work. Of extended service opportunities, there are some that have had best practices. They've learned from everything from liability to mm-hmm. how do you navigate our new healthcare situation
right.
For young adults? I mean, now that they can stay on their parents, and there's just a lot of questions that have already been answered by other organizations that Julianne had that experience and at least had the networks connect us with, that we were able to really click through a lot of that mm-hmm. information and really kind of find out how do you create the best atmosphere, both for recruitment and really making sure that you're preparing young people for this mm-hmm. type of service. How do you make the actual 10-month or 3-month service opportunity the most comfortable and also the most effective, and at the same time, make it a stretching experience when mm-hmm. young people are considering vocation and future careers. But then also, too, how do you build that community, that alumni base? How do you tell those stories? And how do you then, again, recruit new service people who are interested in service? But then also help the core hosts and organizations that are utilizing these young people too for their own ministry as they mm-hmm. reach out in mercy to their neighbor. And so we're always kind of amazed at how much work has been done and how much certainly we're able to borrow from that, but then at the same time too, to pray about and consider what are we doing new in this area too, and specifically as Lutherans and as the LCMS. Mm-hmm. And so that's been a great conversation. And certainly Julianna's experience and knowledge, education and desire and passion for this too has just been great to bring to the table as she goes out and connects with those many networks from the young adults themselves, but then also the hosts and congregations too.
Outstanding. Mm-hmm. The opportunities to serve this year, Julianne, mm-hmm. as we're looking at, or in 2016, I'm already thinking 2016 is this year. We've got a month and a half.
Give us a little time.
It's not 2016 yet.
We have a month and a half before it's 2016. I know. I
need every minute between now and then.
Who would be interested, who would be the ideal candidates for these opportunities to serve as a young adult?
There are lots, I think, of young adults who are in some kind of transition, and those are the students that we're particularly targeting. On whether they're coming out of high school and they're not quite wanting to go into college yet, mm-hmm. or if they're in college and want to take a break or need to want to transition into a new major, not sure what that's going to look like, or coming out of college and not sure exactly where they want to pursue mm-hmm. their career, or even we've had in contact with people who have started their careers and gone, wait, maybe I want to do something different. This is a perfect opportunity for them to mm-hmm. be able to serve, to have on-the-ground experience, to spend some very serious time considering all of their vocations, to grow spiritually, and to have some great experience and community that will support them as they think about what it is that they're going to be called to do next.
Very good. So they could be coming right out of high school. Mm-hmm. They could be some college experience or full college degree anywhere. So you said 18 to 26. So I'm well past that age.
Unfortunately.
Well, it just sounds fantastic. And looking forward to sharing more as more stories come in, as we find out more details. Looking forward to sharing more with our listeners about that. Anything else new going on in youth ministry that that we want to share? Any other news or anything that we want our listeners to know about?
Absolutely. One thing, definitely would invite any of our listeners to attend our upcoming youth ministry symposium, mm-hmm. which is going to be in January 2016. It's going to be in St. Charles, Missouri, at the Embassy Suites there. Mm-hmm. Making sure I got all my information correct here. We're going to be tackling the conversation, which I know you do a lot here on this show, of confirmation. Ah. And so partly LCMS has a new catechism that's in the works, and mm-hmm. so we're going to kind of be getting an update on how that survey went of the church with Reverend Dr. Joel Lambauer, who's on our Commission of mm-hmm. Theology and Church Relations, as well as on the committee. We have other speakers coming in talking about, helping us think about confirmation and faith formation as a lifelong process, and how do we instill that in young people as they're in their middle school and in high school years, as well as we have speakers who are looking at the new generation that's kind of coming in, the plurals, or they have other names that are coming in post the millennial generation, and as well as the amazing research that we're getting more and more about brain development, about educational theory and things as well. So we're really looking forward to the discussion, as well as what we're calling in the trenches, which are really people who are doing some exemplary work in a variety of ways, in a variety of contexts, everything from kind of, if you will, a more traditional approach, eighth grade confirmation, maybe working with a Lutheran school, potentially, and how does that work out, and what have churches tried to incorporate those who maybe don't attend the Lutheran school and still continue mm-hmm. to have those conversations within the congregational context, as well as those too. Some people have done some interesting things and maybe moving the actual rite of confirmation, if you will, later into a high school experience, so there's more opportunities for interaction with multi-generational learning, as well as just teaching the faith itself. So really looking for that conversation. And again, that's January 14th through the 16th. 16th in 2016, again in St. Charles, Missouri. Registration rate for that is $185.
Is registration open for
it
that?
It is, and so that's on our website, www.lcms.org/youth. That's where you can click the registration on that. Certainly upcoming, too, registration's open for our National Youth Gathering, which mm-hmm. will be next summer, July 16th to the 20th in New Orleans, and so we're gearing up for that and looking forward to that and starting to put together much of the program for the event that'll be taking place there as we celebrate our life in Christ alone. So we're really looking forward to that.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Looking forward to that too, and hoping to be there this time around. KFU is hoping to be there and share what's happening at the youth gathering. I don't know if we'll get a play-by-play, but we'll do our best to report from the National Youth Gathering and share what's going on there. When can we expect applications to be open for 2016 Lutheran Young Adult Corps?
Our hope at this point is that they will go out in mid-January. We're still working through some of the logistical sure. pieces of that. And so nothing can be set in stone. But sure. that's the hope is that we'll be able to mid-January be able to take applications, both from young adults who want to participate and also for organizations, churches, and mm-hmm. campus ministries that would like to have a placement. That application process will be open then in mid-January as well.
Very good. So in the early part of 2016. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you both for sharing with us and our listeners here on Faith and Family. Always great to have some time with you in studio, learn about what's going on in youth ministry and now young adult, Lutheran Young Adult Corps as well. Thanks so much. It was great to get to introduce you on the air today, Juliana Schultz.
Great to be here.
Thanks for being our guest. And the Reverend Mark Kiesling, Youth Ministry, Interim Director of LCMS Youth Ministry and Program Director for LCMS Youth Gathering. Thanks for being my guest today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
University Mequon, Wisconsin overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
After one of my visits to Paris, I brought back local artwork as a souvenir. Jenny Drake and her husband returned with a new baby. An hour out of Paris on their way home, Jenny began having contractions. When asked if there were any doctors on board, eight rose to the occasion. At one point, they gave Dad a plastic bag and said he might have to catch the baby. The flight diverted to Dublin, and they rushed Jenny to the hospital, where minutes later, Zoe made her arrival at just 25 weeks. Thanks to modern neonatal care, Zoe and parents are doing fine. I often caution my wife I might return with a child when visiting orphanages abroad. I guess being pregnant to start with helps. Now every time Jenny gets on a plane, sweet memories will come flooding back.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org. And stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
This is Pastor Herb Miller, First Vice President of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Every aspect of our teaching is designed to bring comfort to penitent sinners, that is, people who are hurt and broken by sin and death and all the vicissitudes of this life. KFUO is centered around bringing this gospel into the lives of our listeners in the St. Louis area and by means of the internet far beyond. My wife and I for years have been day sponsors. Our day is June 21st. Actually, this year we're celebrating 40 years of marriage on that day. KFUO brings the gospel into the hearts and minds and lives of so many people here and around the world.
This is Mary Schmidt. To be a day sponsor, call me 314-996-1518.
Hi, my name is Matt Zuschel, a junior at Lutheran High School North in St. Louis. It's hard for teens to stay firm in their faith as they go through high school. We certainly don't get much support from our culture, and it's tough for our parents and churches to do it alone. That's why I'm at a Lutheran school preparing me to succeed in college, serve as a Christian leader, and remain rock solid in my faith. Have you checked out Lutheran schools lately? Learn more at lhsnstl.org. lhsnstl.org.
What should Christians believe, teach, and confess to be true? I'm Pastor Craig D'Onofrio, one of the hosts of Concord Matters. The Book of Concord is a collection of Christian teachings. Every week, we have a panel of theologians who make the things shown us in the Bible clear and understandable. Concord Matters Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Central, re-aired Saturdays at 10 a.m., always available for download on iTunes and KFUO.org archives.
We make difficult Bible passages cry uncle.
We put the chokehold on contemporary issues.
We put the chokehold on contemporary issues?
I know, sorry, I panicked. It's all I could think of on the spur of the moment.
We're Wrestling with the Basics, Saturday mornings at 9:04 on KFUO AM 850. We put the fun in the fundamentals.
Saturday mornings at 9 on KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Today's presentation is an encore presentation. Any dates or events mentioned in the program have already occurred. Joining us by phone today, the Reverend Hisham Shahab from Salam Christian Fellowship in Lombard, Illinois. Good morning, Pastor Shahab.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being our guest today.
It's my honor. Thank you.
Well, I would love to hear about both your history and the history behind Salam Christian Fellowship. Tell us about yourself, Pastor Shahab.
Yeah, I was born in a Muslim family in Beirut, Lebanon. The Shahab family claims descent from the tribe of Muhammad, the prophet of Islam. So we were very proud of our lineage, and we were staunch Muslims, very conservative. And I joined the Muslim Brotherhood in the Lebanese branch in Beirut at the age of 12, really. You know, they kind of it's in Islamic terms, they call it a revival movement, you know. So I was fascinated by the way they interpreted the world and their global view, you know. And so I joined the Muslim Brotherhood, and at the age of 16 only, I was ready to give my first Friday service, really. I was one of the very good people at the Quran, the Book of Islam, and classical Arabic. So I was ready to preach, really. And I did really teach kids in the mosque and stuff. But that was a big day for me. But God had a different plan for my life. I got into a head-on collision, broke both legs, and I was hospitalized for 50 days at the American University Hospital. And there, I mean, I started thinking about the future. And I was interested in medicine, so I shifted gears and decided to learn more English in order to go to the medical school at the American University of Beirut in the future. So I had a plan. I started teaching myself English by reading comic books and reading novels by Louis L'Amour and stuff, you know. And 1980, I was able to get into the pre-medical program at the American University of Beirut. It's the Harvard of the Middle East. I was very proud and very looking forward to, you know, to my medical studies, but God again had a different plan for my life. My only brother, my only sibling, who became a captain in the Muslim militia, then was killed by a Christian militia in the civil war in Lebanon. You know, the civil war in Lebanon raged between 1975 and 1989, officially. Still going on low intensity between Hezbollah and some Sunni factions, but now it's really kind of low intensity. But in those days, it was raging, and my brother was killed by a Christian militia. I was devastated. I wanted to kill my enemies. I got a silencer and a gun and decided to stalk those members of the militia at night, but to kill them off one by one. But there was a college course of cultural studies that included quotations from different world literature, they call it. And the quotation from the New Testament that tugged at my heart was the Sermon on the Mount. So at the climax of my hatred, looking for my enemies to kill them, I heard for the first time, love your enemies. Bless those who persecute you, who curse you. I thought, wow, this is ridiculous or superhuman. Who could love his enemies? So it triggered my interest in the Bible, you know, and they just give you quotations from here and there, selections, really. Mm-hmm. So I read the Bible on my own, and it took 7 years, really, to get out of Islam, if I can say, and started, looking for a church. You know, Arabic churches are not very friendly to converts, so it took me a while to bump into a retired Lutheran pastor from northern Minnesota in 2001. April 2001, I was going into a bank building in Beirut. Beirut, Lebanon, not Lebanon, Indiana, Beirut, Lebanon, okay? When that Lutheran pastor, retired Lutheran pastor, Reverend Dr. Lutz, Bernie Lutz from northern Minnesota, he came to help in reviving the Lutheran Hour ministry after the Civil War in Lebanon. And he was going down in a bank building in an elevator. I was going there to bank to pay a bill, and he was on fire for the Lord, as they say. He was giving his business card around in the elevator. There were five people. I grabbed his business card and looked at it. It was, it said Lutheran Ministry of the Middle East. So, you know, I was an adjunct professor at the American University by then, teaching history, and Reformation was part of it, but let me say he was the first Lutheran specimen I had ever seen, you know. So I called him and we became friends, and he asked me to translate his Bible studies. And in 3 years, he was going back and forth to the States. He couldn't stay in Beirut, Lebanon. He was retired, so just, you know, he promised his wife when they retire, he'll take her south. So he took her to Lebanon, you know. So, but I'm saying that he would escape the snow in Minnesota, come and spending almost 6 months in Beirut, you know. Anyway, so after 3 years, he invited me to come to Fort Wayne, Indiana, he said, would you like to go to seminary? It was a dream come true. I was, you know, hoping and praying for something like this, and it became true, and I prayed about it, and in 2004, Christmas 2004, I landed in Detroit, Michigan, where I started working with the Arabic community there to share the gospel with the Muslims and commute to Fort Wayne, take intensives for my pastoral studies. The recession really hit Detroit earlier than other states because of its dependency on the auto industry. So I had to look for other sources to support the mission. And, you know, it's a faith ministry. Again, I say it's a faith ministry, and I have to raise funds from scratch, you know, everything, you know, even my salary. So I was advised to move to Chicago. I wasn't sure about Chicago, you know. And I heard Chicago for the first time. I heard Al Capone, you know, because I'm not familiar with all the states here in the United States. And so I started commuting by driving my conversion van, sleeping in the back seat, using the back seat as a bed sometimes. There was a wonderful pastor, Reverend Bill Guys of LaGrange, St. John LaGrange, who gave me the room of his daughter, hosted me for 2 weeks almost, and on and off, almost 2 months really. And so in Thanksgiving 2006, I decided to move the family to Chicagoland after I located a parsonage that was ready for rent. So I decided to outsmart the people in Chicago and travel at night to avoid the traffic, you know. So I set out from Ann Arbor, Michigan at 9 p.m., and as soon as I hit to the interstate on 294, I discovered something. Well, during the daytime, you fight crazy drivers and sit in traffic at night. Well, they close all lanes and keep one lane open for road work, you know. And you sit behind trucks spewing, you know, those venomous fumes at you. And I thought, wow, I am called to plant an Arabic church in this difficult land. This is a mission impossible, you know. But what's impossible with man is possible with God. In 2 months, I was really part of a mission initiative to distribute a food basket for Easter to refugees when I bumped into a woman who was a Palestinian refugee who lived in Lebanon and moved to Wheaton, Illinois. And she was like the Samaritan woman to me. She introduced me to the whole Arabic community, and we started a Bible study immediately. Then we baptized 7 people that year. 2008, March 2008, we decided to start, a worship service formally, and it has been going on since. We baptized 25 people so far from the Middle East. Ages range between maybe 1 month and 77 years old, you know. Iranians, Iraqis, Palestinians, Lebanese, what have you. You know, we have people coming to Salam from 8 countries or more, Arabic countries, and Iran as well. There's a guy who found me in 5 days. There's another guy recently, last week, found me in 3 days, you know, from Iran. You see, so it's like a net. We throw it, we catch the fish, and let the Holy Spirit clean them through the waters of baptism. Yes.
What is important for us to know about Islam? Being growing up in a Muslim family, what is it important for us to know about that life before being a Christian? What is it important for us to know? Because I would say many Americans, we know very little about Islam.
Yeah, a long time ago, I met in Lebanon, actually, I met Brother Andrew, the Dutch a missionary who was called God Smuggler. He used to smuggle millions of Bibles to the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc. And I translated for him, took him to the one of the founders of Hezbollah, actually, and gave him a Bible in Arabic. And Brother Andrew says that Islam builds a brick wall against Jesus, you know, that blocks the heart of Muslim from Jesus Christ. But the Holy Spirit removes the first brick and Jesus goes in. And the culture is very, 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 very strong because it's a very, very active social community. You know, they drill Muslims, devout Muslims pray five times a day. So the first these are ritual prayers. I'm not talking about invocations. Dawn prayers, noon prayers, afternoon prayers, sunset prayers, evening prayers, five times a day. You know, imagine if you go to church five times a day, every day, you know. So, this is really drilling them like, it's interesting that former President Bush, W. Bush, called it, you know, Islamic fascism, because it really brainwashes people, you know. And so Muslims are the religion and the community is so organized that it's difficult to go through, and only the Holy Spirit can do it. So anybody who would, you know, consider conversion will be disowned by his family, and his family may sometimes kill him if it's possible, you know. I faced this myself when I, you know, I was, before meeting Reverend Dr. Lutz in Beirut, Lebanon, I was like a secret believer, you know, and but Pastor Lutz gave me more courage, and I joined hands with him. He was like a lone ranger looking for Tonto, and he found me, you know. And we evangelized together. We went out, and I had really to leave after 3 years. And when I tried to visit my father in 2010, he was sick and dying. And two of my cousins, as I said, I was an only child after my brother was killed, my only sibling. My cousins tried to kill me. They tried to ambush me at the airport. I had to drive out and take a rental and drive out from the secure area in the airport and go to the stay in a monastery in the mountains, you know, for 13 days. Another guy called Muhammad, I baptized in 2012 in Trinity Burridge, really. We join hands with many churches here in Chicago, and one of them is Trinity Burridge, where Pastor Bob Gieschel supports the mission. And Muhammad from Palestine described it as the most beautiful day of his life. They discovered, because I posted it on, he didn't mind, I put it on YouTube, and the Kataib al-Aqsa, which is this is a brigade of Hamas, sent a warning to his family that when he comes back, we'll kill him. And I really had, I translate that from Arabic into English, and you know, it's our lives are threatened when we do take this step. It's the last red line that Muslims are not allowed to cross. Mm-hmm. And so what we need is a lot of care and a lot of loving care towards those who convert. They come here to the States. One of them described the States as a social desert, you know, compared to the social heaven in the Middle East, if I can say. A social desert where people, you go to church, people say hi and bye, you know. But in the Middle East, you are involved in your life, and they are involved in your life. You are involved in their lives, you know. So social life is very active, and they come here, discover that a lot of individualism, a lot of materialism. This is why, really, we have to look at discipleship seriously and follow up on those people. I am in touch with Reverend Lutz regularly to help me, you know, disciple people as well as raise funds for this ministry. Also, we support the distribution of Bibles among Syrian refugees in Lebanon. I just received an email from the Lutheran, our ministry office there, that we need more Bibles. Please, Hisham, raise funds for us because we are given 500, you know, copies of Arabic New Testament to Syrian refugees. They have all the time on their hands, you know, and they are loafing around, hanging out with, you know, at street corners. To give them something that expresses the love of God for them is very important. So it needs a lot of work, a lot of resources. And by the way, not all Muslims are terrorists. Maybe most terrorists are Muslims nowadays, but only 15% of them are terrorists. I know it's a big chunk. There are 1.5 billion people, but I mean, Muslims are sinners like us who need the love of Christ, need the saving love of Jesus Christ, you know. So this is one thing. Another thing is that to shift gears as a Muslim from a work religion into a grace religion is sometimes difficult. So this is why Lutheran theology is very important, you know. There are some who kind of convert but still have this mentality of works, you know. Mm-hmm. And this is very important to make them, you know, understand the gospel properly. So this is why Lutheran theology kicks in here and is very, very relevant. If I can say the most important thing, you know, here. Recently, we published reprinted, really, the Arabic Catechism in Arabic by permission from Beirut, Lebanon. Lutheran Heritage Foundation did that. So we have now the Arabic Catechism in Arabic, understandable, legible to people from 22 Arabic countries. It was, the first translation was Sudanese Arabic. Now we have it as a resource. I give it to, I catechize people using this Arabic catechism. I had copies, I mean, from Lebanon before, really, the reprint by Lutheran Heritage, but I'm saying that we have it in Arabic now with explanations and comments, so it's very important to understand that we need them to shift from the work, you know, religion to the saving grace of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. So another thing which is the biggest stumbling block is they misunderstand the Son of God, you know, Jesus, Son of God. So they think it's a physical relationship between God and Mary, you know. This is a heresy that was inherited from, I mean, by Islam, from some heretic Christians, I feel, I believe, in the early centuries of Christianity. And Muhammad picked on that, and this is why Jesus, I mean, they misunderstand the Trinity by sometimes saying it's Father, Son, Mary, you know, because of the Catholic influence, I believe. But I'm saying that the issue is they need to understand that Jesus is the Word of God, and sometimes I use some verses from the Quran where Jesus is described as the word of Allah. And I don't really mix between both, but I'm saying that to build this bridge and ask questions, you think that Jesus or believe that Jesus is the word of Allah. What do you mean by that? They don't know what it means, you know. So we draw them into the Bible, into the Gospel of John here, and they as they read, they are intrigued, you know. And we use the Jesus film, which is based on the Gospel of Luke, and we raise funds for sometimes, like today, I'm given two refugees two cars, and one of them, you know, was already baptized before, and another one was baptized here. Lutheran Church Charities help in raising funds for educating those people. I'm sending one of the of my parishioners, if I can call them, to the Lutheran Hour Ministry conference in Detroit, really, on missions, you know. So we have to join hands and all share our resources together, you know. It's really a very challenging ministry, especially that, as I said, the culture is very strong. Mm-hmm. and needs a lot of work in order to show them that we really love them, or originally love them, you know. There are some missionaries who go out, and when they baptize somebody, it's like leaving a notch on your gun handle, you know what I mean? And leave that it's like having a baby and throwing it in the street without discipleship. But we really care about the people we baptize, and we follow up on them, and we keep inviting them and keep driving them places and involving them in activities, Bible studies, and in order to replace that community they lost, because they lose everything when they make this conversion, you know. And we have to create a surrogate community that would welcome them, accept them, and consider them part of it. Yes.
You bring up a good point that when there is a conversion, when they leave Islam and when they hear the word of God, when they're baptized, that really cuts them off from the rest of their Muslim family. As you pointed out earlier, that you can't even travel back home without the danger of without your life being in danger. Correct?
Yes, I have a lady who was baptized in 2008, and she really, without memorizing, you know, Titus 3:4-7, she said, I asked her, what do you feel? She said, it's the washing of regeneration and renewal of the Holy Spirit. I feel I am born again, you know. And she was the youngest, the baby in the family. She calls home, they don't want to talk to her. She tries on Facebook, they won't talk to her. She feels ostracized, disowned, you know. But we have really seen, you know, miracles too. I mean, big blessings. Sometimes persecution, a blessing. I baptized a guy 5 years ago from Iran. His cousin tore up his Bible and insulted him, you know, in the States here, you know. And this man, he had surgery for throat cancer. And I baptized him the last Wednesday in Lent, and he went home after surgery with a stiff neck, and he couldn't move, he couldn't turn his head. Like when I baptized him, he bent down like a robot, really. So when he went home, he saw Jesus in a dream, you know. I mean, sometimes we just, you know, ignore things that are mentioned in the Bible, but God is using, you know, cultural things, because Muslims set store in dreams, you know, and God is using this. He saw Jesus in a dream. I mean, the dream did not only encourage him. Jesus asked him, Shakir, what's the problem? What's aching you? He said, my neck is hurting. I can't move my shoulder. I can't raise my hand. And Jesus in the dream put his hand on Shakir's shoulder and neck and told him, wake up, you are healed. He woke up moving normally, and he rushed out knocking on doors, Jesus healed me, in his apartment complex. I mean, it's rare, but it's happening. The Holy Spirit is moving mightily among the Muslim communities, and especially now we have things on Facebook. You can see me on YouTube talking about the gospel. You can, as I receive questions from people all over the world about my conversion, and I answer their questions. So, as
Pastor,
I mean, Walther in the 19th century said, now we have the printing press. Now we have the to share the gospel. You know,
nothing
can hold us. Now we have the media. You know, yes.
We are all out of time, but I want to make sure that our listeners can find out more if they want to. What is the website where they can find out more information?
SalamChristianFellowship.org.
Well, thank you very much for sharing the story of both your story and the great work that God is doing through word and sacrament in Salaam Christian Fellowship. And thank you for being that willing servant to deliver God's good gifts in word and sacrament. I really appreciate your time today sharing your story with us.
You're welcome.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org.
Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.